Sean, the NHL trade deadline is over. Last week, in the past, we're moving on. The new podcast is all about what's ahead and maybe a little bit about what we saw last week, which was, I thought it was a bit of a frenzy. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was great. Now it's the rush for the playoffs, right? Like we're,
yeah,
we're what, 5 weeks away, right, from the end of the regular season? So the trade deadline was started slow, picked up speed. Obviously, some big names moved, and there were some great storylines. And we're able to get a little bit of a siesta afterwards, and now we're back.
We are back. We're going to have, on this podcast, we're going to have Paul Maurice, who is the coach of, in my estimation, the best team in the National Hockey League and the Stanley Cup favorite, the Florida Panthers. So Paul Maurice will be joining us in a little bit. They're rolling. What a game, by the way, just to point this out. Like, I was doing a little bit of work last night. We're recording this Wednesday. Tuesday night, I'm doing a little work at my desk. I look up. It's 3-1 Dallas. I look down. I look up about 3 minutes later, it's 4-3 Florida. That's how quickly it can change, and Paul Maurice has been doing a great job there, no question about it. So he's going to join us. But, Sean, let's rehash a little bit of the trade deadline. And the one player that moved, Jake Guentzel, we watched him. I watched him against the Rangers Tuesday night, his debut with the Carolina Hurricanes. 1-0 game. The Rangers, we can get into them a little bit too. But Jake Guentzel, it was the trade that it happened Thursday night late. It was the trade that probably had a lot of division, a lot of divisiveness to it, what Pittsburgh people thought of the trade, what Penguins people thought of it, and really, I think, on a national scale. And to rehash it real fast, Jake Guentzel and Ty Smith go to the Carolina Hurricanes, a conditional first-round pick and fifth-round pick, Michael Bunting and three prospects, Ville Koivunen, Vasily Ponomarev, and Chaz Lucius go back to Carolina. That's just rehashing it. What did you think? Because honestly, in my estimation, I think Kyle Dubas's job here with the Pittsburgh Penguins is just about impossible.
Well, first of all, Chaz Lucius is just a fantastic name. So you win the trade just on that. Like, I don't understand Pittsburgh. And I usually do. It's one of my favorite places to go, and I love the people there, and what a model franchise they've been for years. But who is Jake Guentzel? Did he become Jaromir Jagr when I was asleep on Wednesday night? And that was the deal it was compared to. It was compared to the Chris Beach Jaromir Jagr deal. Like, oh, we got fleeced again. You had an out-of-contract guy who's the fifth, if not sixth, most important player on your team, and you got a boatload back for him. What did you think you were going to get?
And I think that's what it comes down to. They were so overvalued, right? I mean, Jake Guentzel's a heck of a hockey player. We can agree on that, right? He's a good hockey player. But he's a pending unrestricted free agent. The team didn't make the playoffs with him last year. They weren't making the playoffs with him this year. They have to trade somebody. We know it's not going to be Crosby or Malkin or Letang or Erik Karlsson. You got to trade. They're not going anywhere this season. You got to trade Guentzel. And everybody in the National Hockey League knows that. Like, this is not a state secret. Everybody knows that. And they got a conditional first-round pick that, yes, it's only a first-round pick if the Carolina Hurricanes make the Stanley Cup final. That can happen. Okay, that can happen. But again, if not, it becomes a second round pick. The fifth round pick is only there if the Hurricanes win the Stanley Cup. Again, can happen, but all right, we'll see. Michael Bunting is a player they've inserted right into their lineup. They got a replacement for Jake Guentzel, who, by the way, the last month wasn't in their lineup. Okay, Michael Bunting gets into their lineup so they can continue on a path that Kyle Dubas and the Penguins want to continue on, which is an attempt to try to win while you still have Crosby and Malkin and Letang, right? Then they got three prospects. If one of those guys becomes a top nine forward for the Penguins at some point, the trade's a win. It's a win because you're trading a guy you can't make the playoffs with 2 years in a row who wasn't going to be a part of your future. And I don't understand why all of a sudden, and I totally agree with you, why all of a sudden was Jake Guentzel this legendary Penguins player, this generational player who, oh my goodness, you can't move him, not for this package in return. They got fleeced. No, They got exactly what they probably got more than the market would have dictated, if you ask me.
Well, they did, because it was a buyer's market late, right? Like, everybody was mm-hmm. looking for that scoring forward. Tyler Toffoli went as well. And if he's that good, go get him in the summer. Take all your picks. Pay him huge money. If he likes it there, he come back. Like, right. You have that option, right? So, look, you don't ever want to get caught, I don't think, holding on to assets, right? If there's nothing there and you're not making the playoffs, which I think we can agree Pittsburgh most likely isn't, why would you hold on to unrestricted free agents? Like, you're not. They're not your own trade deadline acquisitions like they might be for other teams who are like, oh, yeah, we could trade this guy, but it's going to hurt us because we think we can win the playoffs, so we're going to hold on to him. And holding on to your own rentals when you're really good is not a bad way to go about your business. Holding on to your rentals when you're not very good, mm-hmm. awful way of going about business, because who said Jake Guentzel, when he got to the end of the year, was going to be like, you know what, I really like it here, this team, man. They're going to be good. There's nothing to prove that. They're going to miss the playoffs again. They're going to be a year older. What's the plan? Like, if you're a player, are you, like, other than the mystique and playing with Crosby and Malkin and all those guys, like, what's drawing you to Pittsburgh right now?
Not much. And that's why I say Kyle Dubas' job with the Pittsburgh Penguins, not only is it thankless, I think it's impossible. I don't know how in the next couple of years your team, now maybe I eat these words in a year from now, maybe I'm eating them, right? But I don't know how in the next couple of years you can make that team a Stanley Cup contender, right? And still get younger. I don't know if it can be done, because Crosby is still Crosby. Malkin's not Malkin anymore. Letang's not Letang anymore. And I would argue to you that Carlson's not the same as he was last year, at least, right? It's a thankless job, and he had to do what he had to do, and of course he's going to get roasted for it in Pittsburgh, because he's the new guy and he's trading the guy that helped us win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and he painted himself into a corner by acquiring Carlson, which right. you could easily argue was not their biggest need, but was the best player available, right? But they had Letang, they had other defensemen. Like, that was kind of the domino that made it all fall and left you without the money to be able to sign Guentzel. So he's going to come under fire for that, right? And whatever he does from that point on isn't going to be good enough. And it wasn't good enough in Toronto. That's the other problem, is there's a track record.
Listen, the other thing about it is, let's flip it around, because I think Jake Guentzel can be a perfect fit for the Carolina Hurricanes. Like, I watched him, okay, one game. The guy's coming off LTIR. He hadn't played in a month. Let's take that for what it is. I mean, talk about a double whammy, right? I mean, he leaves the team he's only known, and his first game back with that team is his first game in like a month, right? So he was okay against the Rangers. He'll get a lot better. But they added Kuznetsov. They added Guentzel. What was the knock on the Carolina Hurricanes in the past few years? They didn't have enough scoring. They didn't have the guy that could score them the goal, right? I mean, they get to the Eastern Conference Final last season. They play the Florida Panthers, who, by the way, Paul Maurice joining us soon, their coach on this podcast. They play the Florida Panthers, and they lose 4-1 goal games. So I like the pickup for the Hurricanes, for Guentzel. You know, I think it makes a lot of sense. He is a guy that knows how to score a big goal. He could do that for the Penguins too, but it wouldn't have mattered that much. It'll matter for the Hurricanes.
They needed goal scoring, and they never did it. They never went out and got rentals, and they never had that moment where they were like, we're going to go all in. We're good enough as we are. We don't need to add. And I think it's always been a cultural thing, right? There's a unity there. There is certainly an identity to the Carolina Hurricanes. And I think there's a fear of, when you bring people in, that you're going to lose that identity, that they're not going to be able to inhabit that culture. I don't think you have that fear with Guentzel. I think you have it a little bit more with Kuznetsov. But the price was...
I mean,
bargain basement. Like, if it doesn't work out, who cares? So yeah, I think they kept up with the Joneses in the East, right? Like, all the good teams that are there. Carolina, by not standing pat, stayed with them. I don't think they're the elite, like you said. I look at Florida and I see them as a really good team. I look at the Rangers and I wonder who they can be after their trade deadline. You know, have some questions about the Bruins, and Carolina to me is right where they were before the trade deadline, right in that top three.
Yeah, I don't have any questions about Florida. The Rangers, I think, answered a lot of questions. Let's touch on them for a little bit here before we get to Paul Maurice. 2 years ago, and I wrote this on deadline day, right? 2 years ago, they went out and they filled holes that they had. Vetrano, they get Andrew Kopp, Justin Braun on the back end, right? They went out and they filled holes that they needed to fill. Tyler Mott as a fourth liner. And they get hot. They get a little lucky in the first round. And they go on a run to the Eastern Conference Final, where they ran out of steam against a better team in Tampa Bay. But they get to the Eastern Conference Final. Last year, they went big game hunting, right? Tarasenko, and then they went out and got a compromised Patrick Kane, as we would find out, with the hip injury and surgery that would come, and they lose in the first round. It mixed up the whole chemistry. They weren't able to find it, and they lose in the first round in a very disappointing series against the New Jersey Devils. This year, they have holes to fill. Third line center, first line right wing, depth on defense. They get him. Alex Wennberg is a third line center. He doesn't need to be anything more for you. That's what he is. Jack Roslovic can be a first-line right wing. He can also be a third-line right wing, but he can be a first-line right wing if what you're asking him to do is skate, use his speed, push the pace, forecheck, and get the puck to Mika Zibanejad, right? Igor Shesterkin is on a roll right now. I like what the Rangers did. The Rangers have gone now to a level, to me, they're at that level where I believe that they can go on a long run in the playoffs. I believe that Carolina could. I wouldn't be shocked if Carolina did. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Rangers, and certainly not with the Panthers. I'm not so sold on Boston. I'm not so sold on Toronto and some of these other teams. There's three teams in the East that I'm like, I'm now sold on.
So instead of making a trade, why didn't they just put Kaapo Kakko at first line wing? If your third line wing can be your first line wing, go ahead.
Two reasons. One, I think there is a difference between having a right-handed shot and a left-handed shot in that spot. Okay? So that is number one. Roslovic being a right-handed shooter, coming down the right wing wall, I think that helps. It helps him find the middle of the ice where Kreider you know is going to be and where Mika you know is going to be. Kakko has to protect the puck on his backhand a lot more and play the wall a little bit more. I think that makes a difference. Two, Kakko, when playing there, has been more, he's deferred to Kreider and Zibanejad. When he plays on the third line, now with Wennberg and Will Cooley, he's not deferring. I don't know if it's because he just looks at Kreider and Zibanejad and said, well, they're the top guys, I got to defer, and if I'm on the third line, the pressure's off a little bit. I'm not so sure. But Roslovic, in the couple of games that we've seen him play, it's not so much about deferring. It's just about, you know, skating the wall and making plays and forechecking and pushing the pace and playing with speed. And I think the right-handed shot makes a difference. Kakko hadn't worked on that line. What's worked on that line, Vetrano worked on that line. What was he? A right-handed shot who played the wall, shot the puck, didn't do much in it, didn't have to do anything really all that significant. And I think there's a difference there with Kakko.
So you're saying that Vetrano and Roslovic are interchangeable?
They're totally different players.
Of course they are. It would be, Dan, it would be like you saying to me, I could be a podcast host or I could be a cover model for GQ. This is what you're telling me. You're telling me that Jack Roslovic is your third line wing, but it's okay.
Oh, he's a first line wing.
He can play first line.
He can, yeah. He is right now.
No, he has 6 goals.
He scored 22 2 years ago. He was hurt for 21 games this season, and he played in Columbus.
Yeah, so?
Right. They're not a very good team right now. There's nobody driving the play for them.
They still score goals.
Not all that they many of them.
They haven't been shut out 60 times this year.
No. Listen, I understand what you're saying, but what we look at right now, don't you look at right now in the in in successful teams, you typically find two guys on a line and the third guy that ends up being the complementary piece to that line. And if you can have three lines like that, you can have a lot of success. And I think the Rangers have a top line like that. Roslovic is a complementary piece to that line with Kreider and Zibanejad. And if it can get going at 5-on-5, Mika Zibanejad went 30 straight games without a 5-on-5 goal until scoring against the Devils on Monday night. If that line can get going at 5-on-5, all of a sudden you're a much more dangerous team. But you watch teams play. What happens is the Rangers filled out their lineup. Roslovic, Wennberg. Now they can roll lines. They have a fourth line with legit fourth liners on it, not fourth liners who are trying to move up and play third or second or first line, right? So I think, look, the couple of games we've seen them play, they've won three in a row. Yes, St. Louis was a good win. It's exactly what they had to do. The Devils, they controlled that entire game. And then there was the big boy win against Carolina, 1-0. Where Igor Shesterkin, by the way, Igor Shesterkin is the reason why I really believe in the Rangers now. He's back. He's been absolutely lights out terrific for the past month. Best goalie in the league. I don't know how you don't believe that the Rangers can have a chance right now.
I didn't say that. I told you that I believe. They're one of the three teams I believe in, but I'm not going to be a podcast host anymore because I can also be a GQ model, and that's what I'm going to do.
That's good for you. I mean, I wouldn't tell you to do that, but you know, maybe your wife tells you go ahead being a GQ model.
Well, I certainly can if you can play third line and then you can play first line. Like, why would you be on the third line if you had first line skill sets?
I told you the difference. We could go over this all over the time, right? But again, I like what the Rangers did. That's what it comes down to. I like Carolina. I like what they did. I love the Florida Panthers, Sean. And let's quickly, before we get to Paul Maurice, Vladimir Tarasenko, that addition could be a real nice addition for them. He's a guy who was scoring with Ottawa. He's got a Stanley Cup pedigree. I think he's not going to come in and upset the apple cart here. It's going to be a nice, steady thing. Kyle Okposo, same thing. But the Panthers, and just in general, you look at them, there is a swagger, a confidence that this team has. It's probably built from Sergei Bobrovsky, but it's built from just the understanding, I think, too, that they know that when they go into a game, they're the bigger, more physical, and more than likely more talented team. That team is really good, Sean.
And they're also better conditioned. But this is the exact opposite. And you know, Paul Maurice would know this better than I would. But here's Vladimir Tarasenko, who is a first-line player. Like, that's what you went and got. You went and got a goal scorer. And you talked about him playing on the third line, and they put him right on the first line.
They put him right on the first, yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's when
that's
you
why
need
I don't
a,
coach.
When you need a first-line player, you go get a Tarasenko. You don't go – and it, don't get me wrong. I love Jack Roslovic's game. But first line? Oh, boy.
Well, they didn't want to – they clearly didn't want to pay the price for a Jake Guentzel, right? That's what they didn't want to do. They were in line for that as well. They didn't want to pay for Jake Guentzel.
They didn't have
to. And they wanted to pay for a right-handed shot. That was the other thing, too. So, anyway, listen. We can debate the Rangers all show. But I don't think anybody
Thank
wants
God
to hear us
do that.
Thank
God we're not going
to. Yeah, we're not going to do that. We're going to get to Paul Maurice. Paul Maurice, the head coach of the Florida Panthers. They go to the Stanley Cup Final last year. They're, I think, and I think you think, the best team in the National Hockey League right now. They're rolling, coming off a win in Dallas. Here's our interview with Paul Maurice. Paul, thanks so much for jumping on with us on a travel day, no less. Really appreciate it. So your team's going well right now. I'm trying to look around and say, like, what's, you know, is there any type of thing you could be looking at and saying, we need to work on that? I'm sure as a coach you got one, but not much here, right, with the way you guys are rolling.
You will find something. That's not a problem. Well, five or six different components to our game, they've all been pretty good. Our goaltending has been a little better than I would like it to have had to have been in the last two games. Stolarz was very, very good against Calgary. And Sergei Bobrovsky may have put up his best of the year last night. So we're happy for him. We're happy for us. But we don't like the fact that he had to. But one of the things, Dan, I think maybe the thing that I've enjoyed the most about this group this year is they've really been able to make an adjustment to their game once we have a problem. So earlier in the year, we had lost four or five, and the fifth one was at home to St. Louis, and we got beat pretty badly. And we just weren't anywhere near as detailed as we needed to be in our defensive game, and they just grabbed it, and we won the next nine. So that's happened a couple of times. It'd be a piece of our game we don't love. Don't really love our rush defense right now over the last three or four. And then you know what, Dan? Sometimes it's the NHL schedule, and every team goes through it. It's not a complaint. Sometimes you're a half step off your game because fatigue has caught up to you a little bit. I maybe felt that this week. And we get 4 days off kind of at the end of this week, and then we get back into a really heavy schedule. But we'll be ready for it when it comes.
Well, where does that course correction come from? Is it from last year and what they learned? Is it from the leadership group? Is it a combination thereof?
Everybody has a piece to this. For sure, what we went through last year and the success in a certain style of game. So we won 10 of 11 playoff games, and they were all pretty low-scoring games. They were grinding games, and that's really where I think we – I found a game that we embraced. It's not an easy game to play, for sure. So sometimes it's just human nature to want to come off playing that game. And then we've just got great leaders. We do. And the interesting part of the leadership group is, you know, they say people lead by example, but they're proactive in their leadership and reaching out and talking to, you know, making those connections in the room. But I think if you walked into our room and you didn't know anybody, you really couldn't tell who the captain was or who the 13th forward was, right? They're all a part of it. They all move around each other really well, and they're funny, and then they care about each other, and they joke around a lot. So it's a very interactive room.
I thought your reaction to the win in Dallas was really interesting in that you didn't play the way you wanted to for two periods, and yet you win the game. So it wasn't so much about winning the game, which is great. You want to do that. But you had touched on now, like, the guys now have this. They know, all right, we're never out of the game either. We're not playing the way we want. We're never out of it. Right. I would imagine they know that already. But just to get more real-life experience in that, especially at this time of the year, we're talking here, that was March 12th. We're talking on March 13th. Yeah. Playoffs are a month away. Big, right?
I do think it's experiential. I think you have to, everybody will tell you you're never out of it. Like that idea is in all sports, right? You never quit, you're never out of it, but you need to go through it a few times. You need to be able to come back and feel like, and have the experience. So we come back in a big game like that one. And we that happened to us a number of times, whether it was in the series in Boston last year or, you know, game two, I think in Toronto. We were down 2-0. It came back and won that game. So you get to keep a lot of those things and internalize them. We just don't want to be down. And we don't want to make that our game plan. I winning any one game isn't nearly as valuable as the why of it. You know, was there a piece to a game? I think in the last month, we went into Detroit and then we went into the New York and played the Rangers, and we played very, very well. And those games we understood, I think, and you could feel it on the bench, and our game got better and stronger. So there have been points in the last month we've been very happy with our game. Just, I think we've wobbled here in the last three or four games, haven't loved them that much. But that's good. Like we learn. So we'll get that kind of rush defense fixed. We'll get a little bit of our forecheck back going. And then we get to keep that as well.
Well, sometimes the trade deadline can be a really tricky thing, right? You have a good thing going, you bring some players in. You know, you look at Toronto last year, they brought in six players and it seemed like they had some trouble integrating them. Does your room and what you just talked about maybe give you a little less trepidation because as you're bringing these players in, you know that you have a room that not only understands that they're good for the team, but that they're willing to sacrifice pieces of themselves to make it all work?
I think we have an intelligent room and our captains are intelligent. So the pieces that we brought in made complete sense to them. So that's part of it, right? We weren't dislocating, you know, we didn't bring in a player to take Matthew to Chuck's spot and I got to move Matthew to Chuck around. So they understood it. I'll tell you, so one of the things that I like to do at the start of the year is to get around with veteran guys and ask them what's their favorite piece of our culture? What's the thing about playing for the Florida Panthers you love the most? And one of them said to me, I love the fact when a new guy comes in, it's like he's been here for 10 years because he just feels like he's been here forever. And I think Bill Zito and his staff deserve credit for that, for sure. But it's also the room. Like what happened to our team, somebody kind of called me on this last week. They said, you know, at the end of the, after the playoffs last year, you said you might have a hard time making the playoffs. And they're laughing because we're sitting in first. And I thought, well, we made some major changes this summer. When I say we, the defensemen that we added now are exactly why we're sitting where we are in the standings. And without them, we could have been in real, real trouble. But those guys come in, like Ekman Larson, Mikola, Kulikov, they come in, and within a week, it's like they had played there forever. There is something unique. And I watch it because I enjoy the way they interact, the way they chirp each other. It's different here. I'm a year and a half in. I still don't quite have it. I don't know that I want to either. I don't want to hang around the room that much to know. But the captains take care of each other. They take care of the players. They set a real nice, hard standard. And then they laugh. And then they have fun. And that's an interesting thing to watch.
So, but just by listening to you, it would seem to me that the culture of this team is set and it's been the same. Is the identity different of this team from last year's team?
Right. Yes. And that's a really important distinction. So the culture over my time has been augmented, I think, and this is anecdotal because I wasn't here prior to, but Matthew Tkachuk's addition to the team made a big difference. And then the identity and style of play is completely different than it was. And a couple of years ago, and it had to be. So it wasn't just me sitting there. It wasn't at all me sitting here looking at the team play saying, well, this is just a terrible brand of hockey they're playing. We're just going to change it and we'll win more. We had seven players leave, I think, and a lot of skill went out that door. The style of play had to change. And really, at one point early on, you know, Bill had told me that this might be last year might be a bit of a sideways year because we lost so many guys and you know, brought in Mark Stahl and his brother Eric, and we brought in some really good character guys, and our style of game had to change dramatically, and it did. So it's probably built closer to the way Matthew Tkachuk plays than necessarily the way the game was played prior to that. So that is important. The cultures, and then I guess what I understand about the culture, the very first time when I got the job, I called all the players, and I kept getting off the phone and telling my wife that there's something different about these guys. Like they're all in a really, they're in a great mood. They're excited, but they're also, you know, they asked me questions and they were interactive. It was different. They all seem to be really, really good people that like each other. And they kept saying, oh yeah, you're going to love it. We got a great bunch of guys. So which every team has said every year, with the exception of about four in the history of all sports, right? Great bunch of guys. We do anything for each other. Okay. So that's the qualifier. But like I said, from the first day, I kept getting off the phone going, these guys are a little different. I like them.
Well, it sounds like it's a really good team to make a trip with. And you're going to get to do that early next year with the Global Series that was just announced. You're going to Finland, which has almost become your second home, I think, as an right. NHL coach. And right. You're going to play a couple of games against the team you just played last night.
Right. That'll be great because the hockey, that Dallas team is going, and that the Tanev edition was real nice for them. They got a good team. We've got a good team. So that'll be exciting. It's my third trip there, the one in 10 and I think in 16. And a really great experience for me. I hadn't been to Finland to watch the fans appreciate the Finnish players. All players do, right? They like the hockey, but you know, Patrick Laine was such an important player for the Winnipeg Jets at that time. And the fans just absolutely adored him. And you know, as the stories that I'm sure you've read, like Anton Lundell was sitting in that game, right, sitting in the stands, and now they're teammates. So there's a lot of great stories about that. I think, you know, there's an idea about, you know, team building and getting your team together, and I think that's great. I think the most important thing is the context. If you can change the context of where they team built, you know, if you can take them and put them in an unusual environment, they connect way more often it's not just sitting on an airplane paying cards. It's different going to Finland. But maybe the thing that I'm going to appreciate the most is what a big deal it is. We have four Finnish players now. What a big deal it is to these guys. It's huge, right? The idea to play in the NHL, and we're all, I'm assuming, well, we're North Americans. We've never had to go through it. You follow your dream and you have to go around the world to get there. And family doesn't get to see it. You know, your elementary schools, teachers don't get to come to the game. They never really get to be a part of it. And then to bring their team back and it's a good team. They're pretty darn excited about it. And I am for them.
Does it make a difference when you bring a team there after the season has already started and they know like everything they're doing is, it matters, it counts, as opposed to bringing a team there where they play a preseason game, an exhibition game, and then they start the season? Like you've done both.
I think just for quality, I mean, everybody starts enthusiastically at the start. So we've done both. And I prefer, from a logistics point of view, to be honest with you, I'd prefer to start at the, do it at the start of the year. But that's just because your schedule doesn't get mashed up. For us to do it mid-year costs us about 9 days. Mm-hmm. And those 9 days have to get paid for somewhere. And our schedule, as it is, our travel schedule in Florida can be egregious at times. But I'd still take it over not going all day long. I enjoy them. I mean, different food, different culture, watching the players, watching the fans interact with it. I think these trips are great. They're great fun. They're great for the fans. I would take them, probably I would not want to go after Christmas. That might be a bit much, but early in the year is fine.
And Barkov's played in Finland before, and we all know, I mean, he's a great player and he's a national hero. They're very much like you said, when Laine went with the Jets, it's different because this is his hometown.
Yes.
Like I was with Laine when he went 2 years ago to Tapara, and he was over the moon to show his teammates his life.
Yeah. If you get an opportunity, I've listened and read a little bit of what Sasha's talked about, what a dream come true it is for him to do that in his hometown. It's not just in the country. It's walk the streets you grew up on. He's very, very excited. And I know the other guys are too. Like, this is a big deal. I don't know that we can understand it. I don't know. We can watch it. We can witness it. But I don't know that we can understand what a big deal it is. And these guys are a big chunk of our team, right? And then Barkov, of course, but two of our younger forwards that have kind of emerged into really important players. And Mikko has just been outstanding for us. He's got a big personality. The guys love him. So we're excited for these guys.
But that's next season, and we'll deal with that next season. I wanted to reel it back before we let you go. I wanted to reel it back to this season. So the trade deadline's passed. You know your team. It's set. You got your guys. You're waiting. You want to get Ekblad back and whatnot. But what's your philosophy now? Does it change from before the deadline and how you view what's left here for the season? Is the deadline a demarcation point as well of how things go? Or is it more like, hey, all right, we had these guys, we're just going to continue to do what we do, and we're not going to standings watch too much. We're going to pay attention to ourselves.
Yeah. The answer to that question, again, we'll go back to last year. We learned everything we needed to learn then.
Yeah.
Because the last team in the world that you would have wanted to play was the Boston Bruins. And rightfully so, they were so dominant and turned out to be the best thing that could have happened to us, right? It was the start of so many great things, that challenge. So I certainly never pick a team thinking, hey, we play better against these guys, because the regular season, it truly doesn't matter. You know, I mean, I think we beat Boston years ago and when I was in Carolina and had lost all four regular season games and it wasn't close. So we're not doing any of that. I think maybe it's a bit of a mood thing. We've got a certain number of games we've got to get through. I've got to hold the team to a certain standard. They've done good work. They've earned the coach's respect for their work level. So I maybe change my tone a little bit. I'm not sure I got to that between the second and the third last night, but we're kind of all business without being overbearing. If we feel there's a problem in the game, like we'll do video again pretty heavy tomorrow about that rush. And part of that goes to Carolina with the additions that they've made, with the speed they've added, that their game is opening up, I believe. So it ties to the immediacy of what we do. But we've got about, like I said, there's about five or six components to our game, and there's about four or five values of that we hold true. One of them is how we defend in a certain way. And we've been off that a little bit. So we'll go hard after that. We'll show video on, and but I'm not going to try to cover everything every day. So we're ready. We'll handle our day. It's all we can do. We, I don't know, 94 points might get you in the playoffs. We still got some work to do to get it locked down. And then we're just going to try to keep our game right.
Paul, last one, and I'll let you go. I remember talking to you at the end of the playoffs last year, and you were just in awe about your team and the suffering that they went through, physically and mentally, this, all the overtime games you played, all the injuries. How do teams do it year after year? Like, you know what it is, and you know what you're entering with game one, right? Like, you experienced it last year, you've experienced it, and you've experienced the high of winning it all, but it's got to be daunting at the beginning because you know what lies ahead.
Yeah, I think that's why it's so hard to get back to the final. It's so hard. It's so hard to, you know, an 82 game full schedule, and then the physicality. And then once you get there, you start, as you should, your confidence grows. Usually, as you, maybe when you become more confident, you think you're smarter too. And what happens is you start trying to invent smarter ways to play the game. But actually what you're trying to do is find an easier way to play the game. And that's a dangerous, dangerous thing for us. We that would be one of our values is how hard we play. And we didn't do that last night for a couple of periods. We weren't right or ready. But Dallas, I mean, they were great. So I mean, it could have been 8-0 if it wasn't for Sergei early on. So I think it's human nature, right? We work as hard as we do in our professional lives to create a life for our families and ourselves that has some ease in it, right? We don't work harder to have a harder life. So how could you, you know, in this full contact physical sport, not try to find a way to make it easier? It just, it's probably how we survived as a species. So we're fighting a lot of things right here. We got a lot going on there in Florida. So I'm trying to be mindful of that. I need to push them to a certain level of hardness on a daily basis, and at the same time be respectful that the really heavy stuff's still coming.
Sounds good, Paul. Look, this was great. Really appreciate it again on a travel day jumping on with us. Good luck the rest of the way, and you'll be there in the playoffs. We'll see you there.
See you guys. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff there with Paul Maurice. We thank him for jumping on with us on a travel day, by the way. He just landed on a travel day in Carolina now. Paul Maurice joins us. All right, the Vegas Golden Knights. We've waited long enough to get to the team that at 3 o'clock Eastern time on trade deadline day Friday decided to stun everyone. Now, Sean, you were probably watching the shows like me and following all the everything that was going on, and I'd occasionally hear a couple of people say, oh, I think Vegas might have something going. We'll see. Not so sure. Not once did I hear the name Thomas Hertl. Not once. I don't think you heard the name Thomas Hertl. Yet there was the name, Tomas Hertl, traded from the San Jose Sharks to the Vegas Golden Knights. First off, level of shock, what was it for you? Secondly, do you think it's going to matter this season for the Vegas Golden Knights?
Oh, I was shocked. I just didn't think that Hertl would leave San Jose, right? Like that's... That was kind of, he wasn't on anybody's board really, you know, it was just he'd been injured and the ticket, the money,
right?
It's crazy. Who was going to pick up that money at the trade deadline? But gee, and as shocked as I am, wow, the Golden Knights figured out a way to do it. That's the part I'm not shocked about, right? And I love this narrative that all of a sudden they're the Black Hats in the NHL, right? They're the villains because they did something that's allowed in the CBA and that nobody else has been figuring out. Nobody else has figured out how to do it. Tampa Bay figured out how to do it multiple years, right? Like, injuries happen. This suggestion that Mark Stone is going to play in game one of the playoffs and they're going to activate $27 million of long-term injury relief the day after the regular season ends is complete folly. They have injuries. They filled the injuries. They were more creative than anybody else. They picked up the phone and they convinced the San Jose Sharks GM to give up arguably their best player for not that much. to retain some salary and throw a couple of third round picks in while you're at it.
Right. Amazing. When I first saw it, I thought the third round picks were going to San Jose.
Me too. I thought it was all those picks because you pay money for retention.
Yes.
Right? And now you're paying, or you pay draft picks for retention, and now you're getting 6 years of 17% retention on an elite player.
Now, I will say, I don't think that retention for the San Jose Sharks matters that much right now, and where the cap could be going, maybe it matters.
You know why it matters? Because unless I'm mistaken, they're full up. No more retentions. Your hands are tied.
Their hands are tied in that way. That is true. That's where it does matter. You're right about that. So it's magic. I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights pulled a magic trick. Again, they did it. They do it better than everybody else. They are really good at this. Let's just give them credit. Can we just tip our caps to them and say, they're really good at this? And you don't think that the Tampa Bay Lightning, if they had the draft pick assets and they had the assets, would have done the same thing with Mikhail Sergachev's LTIR money? Other teams are doing the same thing with LTIR money. No, they do. It's allowed. It's ridiculous to criticize the Vegas Golden Knights for what they are doing. It's absurd. It is allowed. Mark Stone is hurt. Where would they prefer Mark Stone be? Watching games in a suit in the press box or a suite or on the ice driving the team? It's not as if the Vegas Golden Knights are rolling right now, Sean. They've won their last two games, but they've needed third period comebacks to do it. And they haven't even been that good in the third period anyway. So they're 4-8-1 in their last 13 games, okay? Hurdle to the Golden Knights. Hanifin as well. Let's not forget about that one, right? Noah Hanifin was the prize of this free agent market, this trade market, until Tomas Hertl gets traded to the Vegas Golden Knights too. But it scares me for this season for Vegas. Look at their lineup. Look at the potential of a lineup. It's loaded. We know that, right? The defense, big. The goaltending, solid. The coaching, excellent. They have all that experience, all of it. Hertl isn't going to play for a while. Stone is out. Maybe he comes back, maybe he doesn't. It's a lot to mesh together in a short period of time to try to make it work for this season on a team that, frankly, since has been about a 500 team since the start of this, since they were really hot through the first, say, 20 games of the season, right? I think it's a lot. I think long run, Hurdle's going to be a huge hit in Vegas. This season, coming off a knee injury and having very little time to ramp it up. He's supposed to be back before the end of the regular season, but very little time to ramp it up and get used to playing with a new team while they're trying to bring back some other injured guys. I think it's too much to ask. I don't know that Vegas has it this year, even with the lineup that just on paper looks loaded. It's a chemistry issue for me more than anything. Far be it for me to bet against the Vegas Golden Knights. Would never do that. Don't do that. Don't bet on the game. But regardless, I think it could be a struggle for them. The other teams in the West beefed up too, and they're going to have to play one of them in the first round.
It's going to be hard, and it's going to be difficult. It's going to take everything that they have, but they've shown they can do it. You know, I don't know that you looked at Vegas last year and were like, oh, well, they're the favorites. Like, they're going to run away with this. I think what they did was surprising on a number of levels, especially with the goaltending that they had. So I love that Tomas Hertl walked in, and you've been around him as have I. He is a good-sized human being.
Oh, yeah. He's a big man.
Walked into that room, and he said, wow, I feel small.
Yeah.
Like, that is just a giant room, and I think that's, excuse the pun, I think that's huge in the playoffs, right? That you can bring that kind of body and physicality and wear teams down over a seven-game series. And I think Bruce Cassidy knows how to do that better than anybody. But I just want to circle back really quick. And you know why other teams don't do this? Is because other teams look at their first-round picks like Gollum looks at the Lord of the Rings. Oh, my precious. My precious. I can't trade my first round pick. Whatever will happen, he could be a good player. You know what the Golden Knights do? They trade all their first round picks. They've had 12 in their history. They have one. And it's this year because the draft's in Vegas. That wasn't part of the deal for either Hanifin or Hurdle, which, again, is completely nutters. But they are hosting the draft, and everybody always likes to have a little skin in that game to say, hey, we're the hosts. Here's our pick. They hope it's number 32, right? But every other GM is like, oh, I don't know. Look at how pretty this is. This is my first-round pick. I can't put it in play. How many first-round picks are impact players? 50%?
It's a great question. Somebody actually asked me, not that specific question for a mailbag, but I do want to dive into that a little bit. Maybe it's a summer project. Like, I agree with you on that. And not only that, Vegas traded their 2025 first-round pick twice. Somehow they traded it twice. It's amazing. They traded it for Noah Hanifin, and they said, nah, we're going to move that to 26, and we're going to trade the 25 pick again to get Thomas Hurdle. It's remarkable what they did. They do it well. I'm not sold on the Vegas Golden Knights this season. I think it's a lot, and part of the reason I think it's a lot is look at the Colorado Avalanche playing really good hockey right now. Nathan MacKinnon is unreal. Hart Trophy tracker this week. Our trophy trackers on NHL.com are running right now. Perhaps Nathan MacKinnon could get his name on NHL.com on Friday in that story. They get Mittelstadt. Bowen Byram's a really good defenseman. A really good defenseman. But they filled a hole. They needed a number two center. But Walker, Duhaime, Trenin, right? I mean, they get Val Nichushkin back. They're a better team. Winnipeg gets Toffoli. They already had Monahan. Colin Miller. They're a better team. I mean, Edmonton made some moves. Not 100% sold that they're the right moves or good enough, but they added depth to their forward group with Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick, right? So I think you can say they're a better team. Dallas gets Chris Tanev. They're a better team. Vegas is a better team. They got the best player of anybody that was moved, but he's not playing right now, and it's a lot to ask. And all these other teams were already better than Vegas.
You know who you forgot in that list? Gabe Landeskog.
Maybe. It's a maybe. And if I'm saying that Thomas Hurdle coming off a knee surgery and being out for a couple of weeks could struggle with the Vegas Golden Knights when he gets started, how's Gabe Landeskog going to look if he jumps into a playoff game in May for the first time in 2 years?
He's going to look good enough to play limited minutes, but that's all they need. You just listed all the other guys. And if MacKinnon isn't on NHL.com on Friday amongst the Hart Trophy leaders, I'll quit.
He will be. You don't have to quit. Your job is safe. It's fine. He'll be there. No question about it. But you see the point, though, I'm trying to make here. Like, we get enamored with Vegas, and they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. But the West, man, like, we just talked about it before we had Paul Maurice on. We picked out three teams in the East where we said, yeah, right? Okay, I buy that team. Florida, the Rangers, Carolina. We're wondering about Boston, and I think for good reason. We wonder about Toronto, right? I mean, Philadelphia, the Islanders, the Lightning, the Red Wings have lost six in a row. So, okay, we picked out three. In the West, there's seven, maybe eight, right? I mean, the Nashville Predators could go on a run. Why can't the Nashville Predators go on a run, right?
I don't know, Dan. Why can't the Nashville Predators go on a run? Who's been saying they could go on a run since November?
You. And last week I gave you the credit for it, and I'm giving it to you again. Right? UC Saros, terrific. They're getting scoring from up and down the lineup. Their power play is better. Their penalty kill is better. They're used to playing under Andrew Brunette right now. Forsberg's been really good. Yossi's been really good. They're 10-0-2 in their last 12 games. They're winning faceoffs, keeping the puck out of the net, keeping shots down, holding the puck. They're doing all the things you need to do to be a successful team, and they're doing it now at a time where I think that they're finally comfortable with the new style of play that Andrew Brunette has brought into that team. And look at the results. They could go on a run. They could be this year's Florida Panthers.
Yeah, and their reward for all of that?
Yeah, first round series against what, Colorado or Dallas or Winnipeg or Vancouver?
Against all these big
teams. We haven't even mentioned Vancouver, by the way.
Thatcher Demko's injury and when he comes back hurts them a lot.
Yep, that does. We could dive into that a little bit here too, because they're another team in the West that's, we think, loaded for bear and ready to go on a run. You read Dave Stubbs had, by the way, a great Q&A, a first in a three-part series with Mark Messier. And he asked Mark Messier about the Canucks, one of Mess's former teams, and he said they look like a team that can do it, right? And they do. But Thatcher Demko, he'll be – Rick Tocchet says he'll be back before the end of the regular season. And that's good. And I guess the good thing – the one silver lining, as Rick Tocchet said, is, you know, okay, he's going to come back rested. Well, you have the ability, if you're Rick Tocchet and he's healthy, to still rest him and keep him fresh and playing and all that. And not having him in the lineup is a big problem for the Canucks. And if he's going to come back at all compromised, it's a lower body injury for a goalie. It's never a good thing. And if he's going to come back at all compromised, then they're in a big world of hurt. But definitely think that the Canucks are there too. So, like I said, eight teams in the West. Any single one of them goes on a run, it's not going to surprise me. Certainly not the same in the East.
No, I think the East is really bottom weak. Like, I don't have any faith. You know, you talk about the teams that are there. Look, the Islanders, good on them. They've won the games they needed to win to get back into it. Detroit's lost six in a row. They got to be nervous, right? We had pretty much penciled them into the playoffs for the first time in forever, and all the Iser plan is coming to fruition, and what a difference it's going to be. You know, 2 weeks ago, you know, that's what we're talking about, and now, oh boy, right? You see, say, and you'd like to see those teams that are out put some wins together and put some pressure on them in Philadelphia, and it's not happening. Washington's not winning. The Devils aren't winning. Like, the door's open.
Door's open. I mean, Buffalo's winning. They beat Detroit 7-3, right?
Yeah.
But they're, but you know, and
they're
5 points
from
is
a long
lot.
Way back.
Yeah. And with 16 games left to not, it's a long way to go. They're closer to the Devils than they are the Islanders and the Red Wings, and we don't think the Devils have any chance. And before we wrap up, Sean, I did want to get, you know, just dive into a little bit. This was in my mailbag this week. I also wrote about Nashville too, but the Devils, in our parts here, certainly there's been a lot of discussion about the New Jersey Devils. We're both based in New Jersey and what they did. And I get it. It's late. It's too late to save their season, but it's not as if Tom Fitzgerald didn't try to get a number one goalie. I was told the other night at Madison Square Garden that they were that close to getting Jacob Markstrom, but it was the Calgary Flames ownership group that stopped the trade from happening because they were winning games and believed that they still had a chance to make the playoffs, so they didn't want to do it. I think it's something that the Devils revisit in the offseason. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they get Markstrom or a guy like Saros, who I wouldn't trade, I would sign. But anyway, if they get a Markstrom or a Saros or somebody like that, John Gibson, to play in tandem with Jake Allen. For now, Kaapo Kähkönen, who got his first start with the Devils at Madison Square Garden, he's either a placeholder or just a guy on a tryout to see if he can do it. And it really resets their goaltending depth that allows Nico Daws and Akira Schmid to go play in Utica or just not get peppered in the NHL the way they were. The moves make all kinds of sense. It's just, you know, the knock on it is they should have done it sooner. And if they couldn't do it sooner, they should have done it in the offseason when I thought they would do it. But they didn't, so it can't save this season. But I think they reset their goaltending depth now.
But they can do both. They did it now, and they got Jake Allen, and he hasn't played yet because of visa issues, and he's certainly a veteran presence for them. I think Tom Fitzgerald had some sort of idea that they were still really good. Like, you still have Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier, right, and Luke Hughes and all these players that you believe that, you know, maybe you can sneak in and you can pull a Florida if you have a goaltender. And so he went out and he got one, and then, you know, we talked about the magic act that Vegas pulled off. Like, to me, this is a mini one, and it goes completely under the radar. They got rid of Vanecek and his money for a UFA.
Yeah.
That they can wipe off the books. Brilliant.
Yeah, and that $3.4 million that they save on Vanecek next season, that's going to a... They're going to go big game hunting for a goalie. They're going to get a Markstrom. They're going to get a Saros. They're going to get a Gibson. That's going to happen. And they're going to have that guy and Jake Allen as their goalies next year. And you know what? The New Jersey Devils are all of a sudden going to be a team that we're looking at and going, whoa, Look at how good that team can be.
And they're going to have Dougie Hamilton back. And I can't explain how important that is. We can bash the goalies all we want. They defensively are not good. But they're playing two rookies for 20 minutes a game. They'll be better because they've experienced it. And Dougie Hamilton will come back and slot everybody one slot down. And maybe they go get another defenseman. And then all of a sudden, your goalie doesn't have to be quite as good. But if you're going and getting a big game goalie, now you got both those things going on.
I think they will. I think they're going to be right back in the mix next season as one of the top, one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. That's a prediction I feel pretty good about right now with the Devils and how they're set up now to do it. So that's the trade the trade deadline's passed, Sean. We're on to the playoff push, but you got to hear some of the stories. These are some great stories about NHL trade deadline, and you will. NHL Backstory Tales from the Deadline is a podcast. It's going to get published Thursday morning. You're going to hear from Ken Holland and Billy Guerin and Julien Brisebois if you listen to it. A couple other former GMs like Lou Nanny, Neil Smith. Stories from guys who've been traded. Like, I was at Barclays Center when Matt Duchene got traded from Colorado to Ottawa mid-game, getting pulled from the game. That's going to be in there. Cole Sillinger, now with the Blue Jackets, can talk all about his dad, Mike Sillinger, who got traded 974 times at the deadline. It's all going to be in this podcast. NHL Backstory, Tales from the Deadline, published Thursday morning. So definitely give that a listen. And hopefully you enjoyed listening to this one, too.
Yeah, I hope you do enjoy listening to this one. But tomorrow's is going to be fantastic. This is the second one in a series that they're doing. Our producer, Bob Bender, is a huge part of it. Really well done storytelling. So hopefully you give that a listen as well and kind of relive everything that's happened. I mean, the trade deadline is one of the craziest days of the year every year, and the stories that come out of it are just unbelievable. So definitely check that out, and we'll see next week. There'll be a little bit more of a reading on what some of these trades have done and how the teams have responded, and we'll go from there.
And I think the Detroit Red Wings get back on track, so we'll see. I don't know. Just my prediction. Put it in the mailbag. We'll talk about it next week. Until then, enjoy the hockey.